We can start. Folks, if you want to address the board on this issue, please make sure you fill out a speaker card. They're available in the back of the room. Okay, Mr. Briggs.
Thank you. Before I launch into introducing this item, we had a couple of comments from the public that they're not hearing the board members very well, so please make sure you speak into the microphones. Is anyone having trouble hearing me? I heard one, yes. That person should move under a speaker. Okay, so the next item on our agenda is the workshop, which is a continuation of the workshop that we had in May. And as our chair said, please fill out a speaker card. We do have a lot of speaker cards already, and I see that there are some folks in the enclave there, whatever it's called. There are plenty of seats available if you don't want to stand. And lo siento, pero mi español es muy malo. ¿Quieres español? Tenemos audífonos. Con español para Virginia, allí, on the table back there. Las tablas. Mesa, there we go. And so we do have, what I was trying to say is we have audio phones available for translation. And as I said, we held a workshop in May for feedback on our February 1st release of the preliminary staff report. And the reason we say preliminary is that it wasn't the official draft for the formal comment period. And if you were listening to the previous item, we were referring to releasing that in November, that formal draft. And then that will have the usual formal comment period associated with that. So this has all been kind of extra informal discussion with preliminary draft before us. And of course, as you all may have also heard, we had lots of discussion before February going back about a year and a quarter. But at our last workshop, we had good attendance, probably about four times as many people as are here today, three times as many. And the board, we recommended, and the board directed us to proceed with that recommendation to continue the workshop to today. So since it is a continuation, we are not going to be repeating all of our staff presentations where we talked about the water quality problems with groundwater, with surface water associated with irrigated agriculture. We laid out the framework of the preliminary draft order, and we're not going to be repeating all that. We will have a staff presentation in just a minute, but it won't be focused on those issues. Since the May workshop, we've received a lot of additional comments, and we've initiated meetings with individual interest groups and proponents of the various alternatives that we received. I think it's three formal alternatives. And the proponents of a couple of those alternatives have requested time at this workshop for presenting new information about their alternatives. And we tried to be clear that the board was not interested in hearing the same thing that we heard at the previous workshop. So we will have a brief recap of water quality conditions and context for renewing the order with summarizing the requirements in the preliminary draft and talk about some of the evaluation that we've done since the May workshop. So, and then following the presentation, we'll hear from groups in, and I'll tell you what our order is at this point. First of all, we had a special request from Joanne Baumgartner with Wild Farm Alliance to go first because she's got a conflict. We're then going to hear from the environmental justice group that Dipti Bhatnagar has organized, and that's a 15-minute chair-approved time slot. The third would be the organized agricultural group for 60 minutes that are chair-approved. Fourth would be Monterey County Water Resources Agency for 15 minutes that are chair-approved. Following that will be all other individual cards that we've received. And then following that will be Steve Schimmick's 20 minutes that has been approved. And I'd appreciate it if everyone would respect whoever has the floor, whether it's someone up here, someone down here, or someone at the podium. Otherwise, if you could refrain from things like clapping, hooting, booing. It's not a World Cup soccer event. Hope no one has those horns. What are those things called? And so please respect those who have the floor, who have the podium, because I'm sure that you will appreciate that when you are at the podium as well. And with and also I should point out that originally we had planned for presenting the staff portion, Lisa, who's here, Lisa McCann, and Angela Schroeder. And just yesterday, Angela had a family emergency and is unable to attend today, unfortunately. So Michael Thomas is pinch-hitting for Angela. And we can proceed with... one other thing. I mentioned that translation is available. Also, we have a couple of bilingual staff that are available. Monica, can you raise your hand in the back? Monica Baticarte, and then Harvey Packard is over here, both bilingual if anyone needs any additional assistance with any logistics or anything. And we can turn it over to Lisa and Michael at this point.
Okay. But before we do that, I just want the public to know I've got 23 individual speaker cards. These are people not related to the presentations. We have to be out of this room by 5. So we've got probably 2 hours of prepared presentations by groups that we've given extra time to. Staff's going to take, 15 minutes, 20 minutes? So I don't think we're going to even get to the speakers until after lunch. Probably won't finish the others until after lunch.
Well, you mean the all the individuals?
All speakers. The individuals. Right. And I'm sure I'm going to get more cards before we even get to them. So expect that I will limit these to the individuals to about 2 minutes so that the board has time to discuss and give direction to staff, and we can complete the rest of our agenda before 5 o'clock. So just to give you the heads up, that's kind of where we're going. And I am going to ask our State Water Board Chair to be the first public speaker after the staff has done their presentation, if she would like to. Okay. Mr. Hoppen did when he was with us in San Luis Obispo. And if you would like to, Fran, you know, please do. Okay. All right. Mr. Thomas and Ms. McCann.
Thank you. Good morning. As Roger said, I'm just going to recap very briefly the water quality conditions and the context for renewing the order. Some summary of the requirements that were in the preliminary draft, as well as mention some additional comments or evaluative comments on the alternatives that were submitted, and tell you a little bit about the some ideas for modifications that we are seriously evaluating and considering now. The primary objectives of regulating irrigated agriculture with an order of this type is to reduce pollutant loading to surface water and groundwater and ensure that dischargers do not cause or contribute to pollution in violation of basin plan and state law. The context that we are framing the development of the drafts and discussions about this revised order is the board's responsibility to regulate discharges to protect water quality, as well as the fact that we have severe and widespread pollution in agricultural areas. And just briefly, we have documented nitrate contamination in groundwater that's used for drinking water sources in several of our agricultural areas in the region. We have risk or potential nitrate contamination to thousands more people drinking water in these areas, where we know that there's ongoing loading of nitrogen that's creating nitrate exceedances in drinking water, but where these wells are not currently sampled, so it's not totally clear to us the extent to which there's potential exposure or increase in contamination in those wells. We also have toxicity from agricultural pollutants, from agricultural pesticides, in major streams and rivers throughout our agricultural areas in the region. And we have many water bodies in these areas that are impaired by multiple pollutants. So, for example, sediment in addition to pesticides causing toxicity as well as nitrate exceedances. Most growers have complied with the current order requirements for enrollment, education, and participation in the cooperative monitoring program, and we know many have made on-farm improvements under the current order, but we also know that poor water quality conditions persist and that there are many farms continuing to discharge in violation of the basin plan, which also means in violation of the current terms of the existing order. So some of the key requirements in the preliminary draft include efforts to characterize pollutant sources and loading, define time schedules to achieve compliance, including interim milestones to measure progress toward water quality improvement in the short term, requirement for on-farm data to verify compliance, implementing a tiered approach based on risk to water quality, and protection of safe drinking water. These conditions are moving towards those required in our other water board regulatory programs and requirements for other discharging individuals and industries. We understand that these revisions are controversial, and we're receiving lots of comments regarding these revisions from a diverse group of stakeholders. And as you know, we're in the process of reviewing and evaluating these comments and working with the proponents of the alternatives to continue to identify areas where we can improve the requirements. One comment that we've heard consistently is that one size does not fit all, and we're treating everybody the same, and that we should be scaling the requirements to make them relevant to the variety of farm operations that we have and address that complexity. Since the May workshop, we've been evaluating different ways of tiering requirements to account for the different types of farming operations and the risk to water quality that the different operations pose, as well as their location and how that relates to risk to water quality. So, for example, we're considering whether or not an operation is in an impaired versus an unimpaired area, the risk of that discharge in terms of its individual operations to water quality. And the relative amount and types of pollutants being loaded from various operations to the extent that we know that some ag operations require, some crops, for example, require more fertilizer than others. This could result in different requirements and possibly different orders for dischargers in impaired versus unimpaired areas, with additional tiering based on the level of risk to water quality that the operation presents. The preliminary draft order included general monitoring concepts that suggested all enrollees except the, quote, low risk, which we defined in the order, would have individual monitoring requirements. Those requirements could be scaled and range from something as simple as surface irrigation runoff discharge volume measurement and nitrate quick tests at very minimal cost to growers, or something a lot more complicated, such as pesticide analyses based on pesticide use and in-stream toxicity. So again, in response to the various comments we've had on these issues, we're further evaluating these options for tiering requirements. Okay. This is a conceptual map. We're trying to illustrate how we might apply that tiering concept for more stringent requirements for operations that are adjacent or closer to impaired water bodies. This map is of the Santa Maria River watershed. Do we have a point?
won't be able to see that up here.
Oh. Can I use the mouse? Oh, yeah, I'll use the mouse. Okay. Yeah, that'll work. So let's see. What we have here is shaded areas in yellow, like that, represent irrigated agriculture. This is based on county crop maps. Grayish blue lines. There we go. Which you can't see a whole lot of, but are the surface water bodies. The red lines, which in many cases here are overlaying those blue lines, the red lines are impaired streams. And then the light blue shaded areas bordering the red lines represent area within 1,000 feet and adjacent to impaired water bodies. So as a tiering example, the order could include requirements for individual monitoring for these areas in close proximity to an impaired water body. This approach, we estimate, would affect about 18% of the total irrigated acreage on the Central Coast and creates an option for tiering the specific requirements in areas that pose greatest risk for continued loading and where we know there is loading causing water quality impairment. I just want to point out here that we did have a lot of commenters and questions that were confusing the idea of this 1,000-foot requirements for operating within 1,000 feet of an impaired water body, which is in the draft order. We had people confused with that 1,000-foot distance with the requirement to have riparian buffers that were from 50 to 100 feet. So we had some comments that suggested that 1,000 feet of buffering would put me out of business. That those distances are being confused between the idea of tiering and having requirements that address operations that are within 1,000 feet of an impaired area as a way to prioritize versus requirements where there's a need to protect aquatic habitat. Regarding time frames, the preliminary order gave 2 to 4 years, proposed 2 to 4 years to resolve individual pollutant contributions to impairment or to reduce discharge volume to prevent loading to surface water bodies. And the difference in time depended on the pollutant. And we're currently considering longer time frames for some pollutants than we originally proposed, such as nitrates, but trying to balance that with more reporting of implementation progress and some estimates of reduction in pollutant loading or measurements of reduction in pollutant loading in the shorter time frames then. And similarly, we're considering time frames, reevaluating the time frames to establish riparian area protections. Groundwater is a little more complicated because, as I said earlier, we don't have as much data in groundwater areas. So we know where groundwater data does exist that we have severe nitrate impairment. But there's insufficient information for us to use to prioritize areas of groundwater impairment at the same level that we're able to do that with our surface water bodies. And as well, we don't have a level of groundwater data that allows us to make any connections to where operations specifically are contributing to the groundwater nitrate exceedances. So we propose to, and are still proposing to have the order have basic groundwater protection requirements for all dischargers that are loading the pollutants that we're finding in groundwater, predominantly nitrate, and to include basic nitrate groundwater well monitoring. And then that would help us be able to, that would create more information for us to prioritize and further scale or tier in the future relative to groundwater requirements.
Lisa, do you have areas where you have data and groundwater is not impacted by nitrates?
Do we have areas where groundwater is not impacted by nitrates?
Right, but you've got ag present.
Yes.
And are you going to consider requiring monitoring anyway?
We're going to look at a little bit more refined than that. We have some areas where we have data where we don't have nitrate contamination in groundwater, and we do have ag where the type of ag operations might very well suggest that we don't think that they're low risk and that we're not concerned.
Right, that's so, what I...
Right, in which case we wouldn't necessarily require the... But generally speaking, our awareness of the data that indicates the problems as well as lack of problems in groundwater nitrate is that there's not enough information to be certain that there isn't increasing concentrations or even in the areas where we don't show problems.
I just wanted to add that we have a lot of groundwater quality data. We have enormous amount of data showing the magnitude of the nitrate problem throughout our region and most intensely in irrigated agricultural areas. We have that data. What we don't have are data on specific operations, how much loading is occurring at specific operations. That's the data that we lack. So the draft order that we wrote addresses that issue by requiring sampling in the submittal of groundwater quality data. We then would use that to prioritize our implementation of the program, where the loading is the greatest, and in areas where groundwater is already impacted, we would prioritize those areas. And where people are actually drinking the polluted water, we would prioritize those areas.
Just one more comment about that too. What's also tricky about groundwater is generally speaking, we understand that it can take a long time for nitrogen applied at the surface to actually manifest in nitrate in groundwater. If that's true, we could be seeing no nitrate in the groundwater right now with the data, but loading could be going on that in another 20 years if we assume that we don't need to track it or that everybody's in compliance. We could end up causing that problem. So we have to really balance that and figure that out. This is just a list of the type of groundwater protection requirements that we included in the draft order. That's to prohibit excess fertilizer or reduce the loading to levels that we think will be less likely to cause drinking water impairment. Requirement to develop and implement a nutrient management plan, to install and maintain well backflow prevention devices or wells on wells that are used for fertigation or chemigation, to properly abandon any wells that are no longer being used in order to prevent cross-contamination between aquifers or pollution from the land surface, to provide safe drinking water when drinking water sources are impacted, and to conduct basic groundwater monitoring for nitrate, as we were just discussing. And to the question you asked, Mr. Young, we are further evaluating a tiered approach to scale the extent to which these requirements would be implemented and reported as well. And, for example, farming operations that are the highest risk or in the areas where we know we have the most serious problems might be more appropriate to require certified nutrient management plans that clearly demonstrate that they are controlling the nitrate loading, and where we have lesser problems to generally require nutrient management but not necessarily require them to be certified or report on them as extensively. So as we discussed at the May workshop and Mr. Briggs mentioned in his introductory comments, we received three alternatives on the April 1st date that we set that were to be discussed and were discussed, in fact, at that workshop. And we set out that we were going to evaluate those alternatives and have, consistent with objectives, the Water Board and state objectives and legal requirements for revising the current order. So we want to really understand how those alternatives will address the water quality conditions that we know exist and the potential water quality threats from the operations, as well as how they're consistent with state law and the basin plan and the non-point source policy. So we kind of established these four criteria that we are applying to the to how what we proposed, as well as to how we're looking at what's in the alternatives. So those criteria include whether the alternative resolves pollution of surface water and groundwater and impacts to aquatic habitat, or clarity about how that can be demonstrated, includes time schedule and milestones, monitoring and reporting of some sort on progress, and ensure that it meets minimum statutory requirements. At the May workshop, we reported that the two agricultural alternatives had several workable concepts that might meet these criteria, but the alternatives as submitted were too conceptual to be really clear about that. And we will have an opportunity to hear more about at least one of those alternatives today, as well as are pursuing discussions with the proponents of those alternatives to work out those issues. And the alternative, we also reported in May that the alternative submitted by the environmental groups, which was largely building on the draft recommendation staff put forth, did meet those criteria. So let's see. Oh, I just said we hope to get more clarity about how the agricultural alternative meets these criteria from the additional presentation today. And we'll continue to consider how the alternatives compare to staff's draft order in light of these criteria. Staff acknowledges that improvements will take time. And we're asking the question, how long can we continue to load pollutants to already impaired water bodies and drinking water sources while we continue to try to make improvements? And what should we be measuring along the way? So applying these more specifically to the alternatives, the preliminary draft agricultural order proposes to measure pollution reduction with discharge monitoring and reporting on water quality practice implementation. It also identifies interim targets and milestones and included reductions in volume of discharge and pollutants as a way to measure the effectiveness of any adaptive management or operational changes made. And finally, the draft order includes specific time frames that result in meeting water quality objectives in less than 10 years and largely within 5 years of the order. We don't yet see how the alternatives presented address those fundamental issues and questions, and we'll learn more about that again today, as I said, and that will the comments today, I understand, will focus specifically on smart sampling, which may contribute to useful measurement, and we'll hear more about how agricultural alternative includes practice implementation, compliance reporting, and adaptive management. So what staffs will look forward to learning more about that and working on timeframes and clarifying or discussing different ideas about how to measure and report progress. This is a summary of the ideas that we're really focusing on in terms of revisions directly in response to the comments, the outreach and meetings we've had, as well as what's in the alternatives. We're evaluating multiple orders as a way to address the comments about not using one-size-fits-all approach. So, again, that could result in an approach that includes a separate order for impaired areas that has additional requirements, and a different order for unimpaired areas that clearly has fewer or less stringent requirements. We're evaluating commodity-specific orders, specifically looking at nursery greenhouse specific order, as well as potentially issuing individual waste discharge requirements for the largest and highest risk operations. We're evaluating tiered monitoring and reporting specifically, and the use of compliance reports for implementation progress instead of requiring submittal of farm plans. And we're evaluating modification of timeframes to increase and vary the timeframes to achieve water quality objectives for different pollutants, as well as to resolve habitat impacts. We received 16 additional comment letters between the May workshop and this one. Those were all posted on our webpage with the other comment letters from the May workshop and that we received previously. The substance of these comments was similar to those received for the May workshop. So that includes support for regulation of agricultural discharges to groundwater, support for protection of drinking water sources, support for requirements for individual groundwater monitoring, as well as opposition due to economic hardship, reductions in crop yields, potential for farmers to go out of business, concern about the aquatic habitat requirements, and objections to individual monitoring and reporting. The one unique comment, which we spoke about earlier, previous item, was the comment from Senator Tony Strickland, the 19th District in the Santa Barbara area, requesting another workshop. And as I said earlier, staff's view of that is that we've had so much participation by agricultural and environmental representatives in the Santa Barbara area, we didn't really see that that would be necessary. We're quite willing to hear from Senator Strickland or other stakeholders in that area if there are people we are not talking to from that area that we need to know about, and they're welcome to contact us. We've already initiated discussions since the May workshop leading up to today, and we actually had a couple meetings scheduled with Monterey and San Luis Obispo County agricultural commissioners and staff from the Department of Pesticide Regulation, but that has since been rescheduled to later this month. And we've been in contact with the representatives from the Farm Bureau on the agricultural alternative and are starting to schedule those meetings and design agendas for those discussions. We can say more about our specific next steps, which we also discussed quite a bit in the previous item. But I wanted to see if we could hold sort of that till the very end and some of the concluding comments based on what else we hear in the presentations and the comments. And that concludes my introductory comments, and I hope brings you somewhat up to date on what's been going on since the May workshop.
Okay. Is there more to staff's presentation? No?
We wanted to make some concluding comments and discuss next steps again. Other than that, no.
Okay. All right. Mr. Jeffries?
I did have one question, and I'm sorry I had to step out of the room for a minute, but the consideration of the riparian buffers and the food safety rules and regulations, is the staff working on that?
Well, we're continuing to dialogue with the various entities on that, but our position continues to be that the removal or the lack of support for including riparian buffers is that they're necessary to protect water quality.
There's
more evidence in support of that than in the other direction, where they removing them creates real food safety.
Well, it looks like to me we have two governmental agencies saying two different things.
Okay. And so it would be nice to try to get, do what we can to maybe get that resolved or understand where we can agree on some changes before we put things in an order and then have legal requirements imposed on growers that just going to set them up for problems. So maybe you guys can think of how we can continue to look at, approaching, it's the Department of Food and Ag, right, on that.
Yeah, we are working on it. We'll continue to work on it. There's, in addition to the food safety issues in the Department of Food and Ag, we'll address the issue of whether you actually do have two agencies with conflicting requirements and whether the food safety requirements are actually agency requirements or how much of them are buyer requirements, auditor requirements. And the other issue that we have to address are fish and game regulations to make sure we're compatible with fish and game requirements and their regulations. And we met with the Natural Resource Conservation Service to talk about the language in our order regarding riparian protection and specifically Daniel Mountjoy. And we're going to continue to meet with him and the NRCS to work out differences that we have with respect to protecting riparian areas. So, yeah, we have more work to do on that.
Okay. Thank you. Any other board comments or questions at this point? Okay. Thank you, guys. Mr. Briggs, I guess we'll go to our prepared speakers.
Right, and you should have Joanne.
I have Joanne and Ms.